Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Justin Robert Young.
Why, hi, friends. How are you?
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Oh, I'm over here. Hello.
Gentlemen, some stories to talk about here. There was a little bit of a news that came out last week. We didn't cover it because I was waiting to find out more details. But imagine this. There's a radiation detector in some cities in Russia. Uh-oh. Radiation detector spikes a bit. People get a little bit worried. Maybe there's an article in a Russian newspaper about a possible nuclear accident. Then a day later, that article's gone.
This has to be science fiction, right? It's not like we can name any other event or time that this actually happened.
Not if you're based in Moscow, you can't.
So,
I mean, aside from that one time that the CIA agents came in and demolished a Russian nuclear facility.
Wait, what was that?
That's among the popular theories about what happened with Chernobyl, including the success of the series has now led Russia to commission their own series, and that's going to be part of the plot. Is that
what?
There is American interference. That
a Hong Kong protest, CIA too. You didn't know that?
Oh yeah, my god! Yeah. All right,
That's it. Like that's legit the thing that those media will do to say. CIA. It's like, and there's no American equivalent to this too. When we're unhappy about the way something goes, we have no version of this that we use when we want to.
I mean, actually we do. It's just Illuminati. It's Illuminati confirmed is what we say, but it means the same thing.
There's some other. We don't blame some other country though. We never say this. You know, we never say something meddling. We don't say that.
Yeah, sure.
The Patriot Act meddling. That's right.
Yeah. Got him.
So yeah, it's funny because it's like. Because you look like, oh, they're blaming the CIA. Like, oh, wait, we do that too. You know,
we're not so different, you and I.
Yeah.
So I actually don't know this story.
The story is apparently Russia, you know, likes to develop like really kind of like they like to say like, oh, we're developing this crazy thing. And often they just do it for PR value. It's like, oh, my God, they're going to develop, you know, a flying shield helicarrier or whatever. Like, no, they're not. They said they are, but they're not. But one thing they announced they were trying to develop was a nuclear-powered missile. And so basically nuclear-powered missile is using, radiation to heat up your fuel to make it go really friggin' fast. And so they announced they're working on something just before and may have tested this. They think that may have been what exploded, but it doesn't maybe have the same prototype, signature of what they think. But some think it may involve just some sort of nuclear propulsion system that exploded.
This was this the story where it's like, hey, even if you develop an anti-missile shield, we're in the middle of creating missiles that'll go so fast that won't matter.
Yes. I mean, that's kind of the idea is if you build something so fast, you can counteract, you know, the measures for it or go faster than the countermeasures. The problem, though, is that if your missiles explode before they launch on your own territory, self-defeating.
Yeah, would traditionally be described as suboptimal.
If anything else, I mean, it does kind of lend some credibility to their claim that if they don't have it today, they're certainly serious about working on it.
Sure. Oh, yeah, their weapons program is serious about doing stuff. You know, it's just the challenge comes into you can get some engineers together. You can get a group of engineers to say, hey, we think we can make a prototype for this. And that's what they've been doing. And maybe it won't get to a point where it won't blow up. But then if you want to scale it into production, that's where it gets super expensive. And that's one of the problems of a lot of weapon stuff. We've built this advanced weapon system. It's like, great, you got the prototype. But, you know, if you're going to be a threat, you need to build more in theory. Although sometimes all you need is one bomb.
I mean, I don't know. Traditionally, it takes two to really get the message in.
Yeah. Don't know what that reference is about at all. So it's curious. We're finding out. And it's the hard part is that, you know, you're dealing with a state media that, you know, shuts these things down completely. And so we don't know what's going on. And it, to Brian's point, it's like, yeah, like we don't, you know, we can laugh it off and go, ha, ha, ha. Yeah, good luck on that. And then one day you find out, oh, yeah, no, we figured it out. And we have a lot of them.
Yeah.
Something to think about. I mean, what's the coolest thing you've heard about, like weapons wise or, you know, crazy theoretical?
The latest thing that really caught my attention is the fact that in the Hong Kong protests going on right now, we have a real life conflict where police and law enforcement are using chemical warfare and protesters are responding with lasers to blind them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fairly remarkable sci-fi real life thing that's happening. And what's funny is, on the one hand, you know, there's nothing great about anybody getting hurt in the middle of this conflict, but everybody's playing by gentlemen's rules. Like, clearly neither side wants a single human fatality. They're just both trying to do their jobs. It's really weird.
And the lasers they're using are to stop facial recognition systems, not to blind the cops.
Okay.
Yeah. That's, and also, like, I don't know enough about what's really going on the scene to speak to who's really playing by rules or not, but it is fascinating to see. I don't know if you saw the video of where you see, like, thousands of laser pointers aimed at the cameras.
The one I saw, and that's the other thing, is this is part of me that the artist adores, that they're working together to create the ultimate rave scene. Like, we'll show up with the smoke bombs, you show up with the light show, and we'll get this amazing cyberpunk vignette.
Yeah, but it's yeah, there we go. Look at those are all the lasers, which is the video right now of lasers trying to aim at every camera and stuff to try to stop. And it's, you know, it's from it's here, amazing. It looks amazing. It's beautiful.
It's amazing.
Know? From there, I think, you know, there are tanks massing on the border. It's probably a little bit terrifying.
Well, and they're shooting it at, like, this sort of domed structure. And so it makes it look like a you know, like a DJ set or something, right? Like a big stage show.
It does. Yeah, because there's, like, a projection on it, and there's
I mean, that's the only thing that's missing.
There's a lot going on, and it is a remarkable cyberpunk visual to understand that it looks like that, and yet what we are talking about is a relative to the region and certainly to the rest of what is nominally the country, a very free thinking people that are teetering on the edge of, you know, being crushed under the boot heel of a totalitarian state.
You know, I was wondering, even I was a child, what was it, 1990, 1989, that the handover happened? I think I was...
97 was the handover.
Okay. I remember at the time thinking, like, well, how long can China treat it like Hong Kong? And at what point does China try to Chinify this British colony? And I guess we're here. I guess 20 years plus is the number.
22 years.
Yeah.
There we go. Answer. And even then, it was you know, by degrees. I mean, what they are protesting about is extradition. That, like, this is the thing that as soon as the Beijing is able to just kind of disappear people out of Hong Kong, that you lose the rest of it. Whatever autonomy Hong Kong had, that's a wrap.
To be honest, I'll bet you could go back and I'll bet there is a number of futurologists who had pegged that as being the issue, because that's a pretty good issue. That's pretty black and white. That's not about, like, taxation. It's not about, you know, whether you do or don't care about political control one way or the other. Like, if you're talking about, like, no, you're doing the thing where you make people disappear, and you're not going to do that here because that's not us.
I mean, and this is now, we are into months, plural, of street protests. They shut down the Hong Kong International Airport for 2 full days. And by the way, that is only the story. I mean, compare when the Hong Kong International Airport got shut down versus when the Gatwick Airport got shut down because of the mysterious drone thing. That was such a bigger story in the Western media, mostly because reporters could just copy and paste tweets from everybody who was affected globally, right? But they're writing in English by and large if they're flying through Gatwick. There's like so much of that Hong Kong traffic. Obviously, much of it is English, but not as much as people that are going from London somewhere else or stopping over through London and are likely going to English speaking countries. Like, that is massive. You shut down the Hong Kong International Airport, considering what a huge bulwark that is for Asian travel writ large. Like, I've flown through there twice, and I think I've gone to Asia like four times. Like, half of all of my trips through there have at some point spent multiple hours at the Hong Kong United Club.
Well, and also, it's smart if you want Western attention. That's the way you get it, is have Westerners who suddenly can't go home and have them really think about how this is going to go.
Yeah, you know, it's also an interesting contrast, because it's like you see where Hong Kong is still largely, you know, is freer than China, the other parts of China, and you get an example of this is what people can do when they have more open forms of media. They don't have to go through VPNs and they can communicate, versus how China internally is able to shut this stuff down. You know, like literally, like, you know, they control their version of Twitter. They control their version of these. The state controls these things and can stop these things, can stop people from getting. They can shut down cell phone networks and they can prevent people from getting together entirely. You know, and it's just it's from a point of the science fiction point of view, is like, this is what it's like when you can freely, you have the technology to get yourself to freely assemble, versus over there where the government has kill switches on everything. It can stop that, you know, pretty much before it gets going. And for groups of people who use lower tech ways, well, we have these re-education centers and stuff.
Are they, yeah, are they using any of the crazy weird things, technologies that we've talked about before, like sonic weapons or anything, or microwaves to disperse crowds? And if not, how long until they do? Because a lot of these things we've talked about before have been, you know, Chinese developed technologies.
Well, you have the Hong Kong police, which are trying to manage the situation, and then you have the Chinese outside saying this is what we've done. So Hong Kong police are in a very precarious position, because if they start to turn too much on, you know, what's going on that, you know, using, like, there's some photos of like some of the stuff, you know, the more extreme the measures they do, the bigger the, you know, it's.
It's, you know, it's so funny because, yeah, like, it's a literal war of stories. It's there are two stories to be told, and each one has to play this game of brinksmanship to get as close to physical violence as possible and try to lure the other side
into overstepping. Part of that is that the Hong Kong police don't want to be on the other side of this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're Hong Kong police, right? They're playing for the Hong Kong team.
They're like, look, we would much rather just be issuing parking tickets. Like, we don't want to be the tip of the spear of Beijing. And yet they have to be, they are nominally the way that China can say, oh no, this is just an inner Hong Kong thing. You know, you got a bunch of protesters mucking things up, and the brave police are doing everything that they can to make sure that it's handled accordingly. But then meanwhile, look, China's got a problem on their hands.
And did I tell about what the Chinese sponsored protests when I was in New York?
No. Oh.
So when I was went to Thriller Fest and I was staying at the Grand Hyatt, the president of Taiwan was staying there because there was some sort of negotiation stuff. So just background, because, and I apologize to everyone, Taiwan is a separate country from China, although China considers it a territory, right? There was a, you know, breakaway republic because after the Civil War and the, you know, loyalists went to there and they formed the Taiwanese government, and they have this weird relationship. China considers Taiwan part of China. Taiwan considers themselves sovereign.
The weird relationship is, hey, that's cool that you think we're a territory. We think we're an independent country. Also, we've got a fair number of missiles. So let's circle back to this never.
And you get into, it gets weird because of that, but like, you take a company like Foxconn, right, which makes iPhones, all this sort of stuff, which you talk about, oh, the Foxconn factories in China, they're owned by the Taiwanese. For the longest time, the most high-tech factories in China were actually run by the Taiwanese. And it gets confusing for a lot of people, and they just go, ah, China. But it's a very complicated thing. So the president of Taiwan was, you know, staying at the hotel. And so there was across the street, I'd wake up every morning from like Chinese martial music playing. And there was like hundreds of people out there holding up pro-China signs and stuff, Chinese people, you know, doing this. And, you know, to sort of say, one China, we're one, to say, no, we're really one, we're really one. And you're like, who? It annoyed me, you know, because I'm being woken up by this. And you're like, what is the point of this? And it was sponsored by the Chinese government. Yeah, it's sponsored by the Chinese government. They're the ones that get the people to get the permits, get them to be able to, you know, to go do this sort of thing. And it was just sort of this, you know, I frankly found it annoying, but also just to show you the reach that Chinese government had was, you know, they could get, you know, number of their citizens living in the U.S. to show up to go make a political statement against this guy.
By the way, this was a story that just popped either today or yesterday that Taiwan has offered political asylum to the Hong Kong protesters, and that has angered China.
That's a brilliant move on Taiwan's part, because there has to be, if I'm living in Hong Kong, like, let's say I'm obviously in agreement with the protesters or whatever. Also, like, hey, this crazy summer that we're having of protesting can't go on forever, and winter's coming. And wouldn't it be great if I wasn't there for a war? Or when the dinks show up.
to be totally honest, and I know we've been kind of goofing around a little bit about this, but like I am deeply fearful of the moment that like, oh, Taiwanese or Hong Kong internet just shut down. And then we just, you know, by the time that the lights come back on, everybody's on the same page and many of you are missing.
We lost a generation of people in Tiananmen. You know, we don't know the story. We don't know the full story, you know, with thousands of people that went, you know, gone and it permanently changed the fabric of that society in a way that I don't think was helpful.
God, I really perceive, I mean, even thinking of what a displacement it would be, I think I would grab my entire family and just get to Taiwan the moment that offer happens. It seems like now's a really good time to sell boat passage.
You have things that happen that you know, when you have any kind of protest movement, regardless of how you necessarily feel about their ideologies, these are very passionate, often very intelligent people who do this, or people who are part of some sort of movement. And in other regards, like, you think of what we lost with the AIDS epidemic, you know, the artists and the creatives and amazing people, you know, in China, at the Tiananmen, you had a bunch of people who were, some were reformers, some were other people who were wanting change, whatever, not all of them wanting super liberalized Western style, but wanting changes and things like this, and then gone.
How many, you know, how many people were lost in Tiananmen Square and so on? Nobody knows. No way to tell. Yeah.
We don't know how many were told, you know, that now there's a file on you that, you know, this and that, and we don't know. And it could have been, you know, we know a number were killed, but a number were reeducated, whatever. But that was just,
and then there's no way, much like the Chernobyl disaster that we kicked things off with, there's no way to know the exact number of people who got cancer because of Chernobyl. Likewise, there's not any way to know how many people quietly were whispered and told that they were in the hangman's noose and all they had to do was utter one word and they would quietly, you know, die.
Yeah, you know, here we see a headline that says the death toll is 10,000. Like, you know, we don't know. Remember the one guy that stood in front of the tanks?
Yeah. Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Iconic photo. There's rumors of what happened to him, but we don't know.
It's not acknowledged by Beijing. Like, that's it. Just that. What anniversary?
What are you talking about?
Happened. Yeah. There's literally no acknowledgement at all. Which is like, dude. I saw some people on Twitter the other day or online that were like, oh, look at all these Chinese actors and actresses and hip hop artists that are all like tweeting solidarity with the Hong Kong police. And it's like, yeah, look at all those people's families that are going to be able to sleep calmly tonight and not have to be moved or reeducated or worse. Like, that is not the same society. We are not looking.
Well, sure, except for the ones that are Chinese Americans that were doing that, which it's free, fine, get involved in it. But once, if you're not from there and you're here and you're doing this, if you're under that threat, that's fine. But, you know, I don't, that's a thing that was sort of is like people who are stepping into it and maybe didn't need, who are stepping into it and getting the repercussions from it. Cause it's like, I don't know what that was.
I mean, the stuff that I was reading about was all people that were like based in China, but,
Well, the most prominent one I read wasn't, and that was the thing that was like, you know. But yeah, you're right. I mean, if you're from there, like, yeah, like, you know, like, you know, we talked about was the actress, X-Men, went vanished.
Oh yeah, the one that just went missing. Yeah.
Yeah, and then like ended up like married to some Chinese party high party member.
Wait, sorry, who's this? I know nothing about this.
Fan Bingbing.
Yeah, Fan Bing, yeah.
So she was an actress on an X-Men movie and then just dropped off the grid and now it turns out she's
happily married, Brian.
Fan Bing Bing, she got trouble for some tax thing or something, whatever, and literally vanished and then kind of reappeared a while later and you know, she apologized and then she ended up like married off to some high Chinese party official and
but she was gone for 3 months. I know we covered it extensively on the show, but she just disappeared and then came back and paid the government $127 million. So
one of the most famous actresses in the world. I mean, you know, here she's, you know, wasn't as recognized, but around the world, and that was scary.
I mean, that also, they disappeared the head of Interpol.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So is that, you know, International Law Enforcement Agency, Interpol, you know, the head of it just disappears. Yeah. And, you know, boy, was there a lot of, headline.
No, nobody said anything.
Just kind of a thing where the head of Interpol just suddenly gone. Look at that.
Won't disappear.
Such weird things.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Look, unrelatedly, we'd like to buy insurance to make sure that none of us get disappeared. If you would like to help us fund our insurance for protection, then head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings.
We're gonna buy. You're gonna get those dog chips implanted in us. Oh, those don't have GPS, but we'll get GPS chips.
But we literally get the dog chips put in ours.
That's exactly how we would do it.
Name Andrew, like, we all species got human.
It was an idea that I had for a bit somewhere, but I forget if I did any research into it. But I wanted us to submit our. Brian, it was after you got Kepler DNA tested.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be really funny if we just spit in a tube and sent it into the dog.
For those that know, Kepler is the dog. Kepler DNA tested, but that would be cool, too.
That'd be funny. Anyway, you can help fund such shenanigans by going to patreon.com/weirdthings. Not only do you get the satisfaction of making sure that this show is paid for and indeed done every single week, but also you get our after things podcast before anybody else does. Head on over there right now, friends. That is patreon.com/weirdthings.
Hey, imagine you wake up one day and you look on your front door and there's an old school TV set just sitting there.
Oh, I know exactly what this is. First of all, that's not too long ago because I had to build for these NACA conferences a booth, and I found out that they had like old school CRTs for only $75 at Walmart. Guess who bought 8 of them and then set everything up to make a crazy display and then realized those things are heavy as hell and couldn't get rid of them fast enough.
Yeah, you wake up one day, there's a TV on your doorstep. You go to your neighbor and you go to knock on their door and they open up the door and there's a TV sitting there. Like, what's the deal? Like, I don't know. I got this TV. And somebody else is like, I got a TV too. And so I'm like, but I got a Nest Cam. Everybody, let's gather and watch. Let's see what happened last night.
Do you know about this story, Justin?
I do not know about
this story. So essentially a whole neighborhood wakes up and the TV fairy has showed up and given everyone an old school CRT. They all gather around. They play this Nest video. What do you think What describe to the best of your imagination
what
you happens.
See. Yeah.
So I would assume, and I'm going to assume that this is wrong because I don't know how exciting of a visual this would be, but I would guess it is some kind of performance arty sort of thing. So I would just suspect some hoodie pulled up, maybe bandana around the face, person that's just dropping off these TVs because they wanted to be a fun commentary on society.
I like where your head's at, but I need you to, we need something that's going to pop, that's going to make the people talk. Come on.
There was one name that came to me, and I'm going to say, Justin, imagine Rudy Kobe decided to do this.
Yes. Imagine that he was the one behind it. And now what does it look like?
I mean, all right. So I'm going to assume more than two legs, lab coat, and it's, just the legs of an android are pushing the cart with all the different televisions on it.
Could. It's probably as valid as what happened. Do we have video of this, Bryce?
Yeah, we do. Here it is.
Describe for everybody.
Oh my God. Man with a CRT helmet that is bringing CRT televisions to everybody's doorstep.
He looks
that
like the world's worst Daft Punk guy.
He looks like those bad guys from Saga, the comic book.
Like the Resident's biggest fan or something.
Yes. No. Oh my God. That's so good.
So it's a guy with a TV for a head. We don't know. He's wearing like this utility, like workman suit. He's got a TV on his head.
So he's got work boots. Think of, like the Maytag man. He's got like an untucked Maytag man kind of outfit on.
He found something to do.
The television for a head. But that's. No, it is just amazing. Just fantastic.
So what's happening clearly has to be the performance art result this person was hoping for. Like, some number of these houses has to have one of those doorbell cameras.
Yeah.
I won't know which ones, but I know if I deliver two dozen TVs as the mysterious TV fairy, then definitely it's got to show up somewhere.
Do you know how many he left?
I want to say like three dozen or something.
Like over 50. Over 50.
Oh my God. Dude, that's
all
work.
In one night?
Art is pain.
It's beautiful. This is the world I want to live in. Like
you do. Hey, you do.
Well, good point. We live in the best timeline. I remember when I was a kid. And before the internet, this is going to be hard for some people to even wrap their minds around, but before the internet, if you were 12, you just wanted to sneak out and toilet paper a house because it was better than sitting around. And I remember explaining to my mom, like, look, it's not the vandalism that I want to go do. Like, it's the sneaking out that I want to go do. And it's like, what if I just tie a bunch of ribbons everywhere? I was trying to think of, like, pro-social things to do. And then later, of course... at the age of nearly 40, we were doing the same thing with our compliment bombs, Justin, on Night Attack and NSFW show. And this feels like a compliment bomb. It feels like the fantasy in real life that we wanted is sneaking up and giving a gift.
What we used to do in high school was we had the same thing. We like to sneak attack and do stuff is we made our own flags. We'd find empty flagpoles.
Oh, and just run up rando flags?
And run it up the flagpole?
Yeah, we did that to our high school one night. We go drive up, we pull up to our high school, we're raising our flag, and we see these two cars come to a screeching halt, and cops come running out. And the guys, ununiformed, like they were like, but they had guns, they're like, what are you, freeze, like, what are you doing? And we have this flag with all of our little symbols on it, and we're like, it's a thing we do. We just make our flags and we put it up the flagpoles, empty flagpoles. They look at it and they go, huh, that's kind of cool. Carry on. And they left us because they realized, because they're like, they're thinking, are they running into dirt bags? And they see we're just goofy kids and we show them the flag. We explain the thing and they're like, oh, that's cool. You know, they're like, that's cool.
This is classic all-American hijinks. Go on, good sirs. But, I saw American Graffiti.
So apparently this happened last year with like 20 TVs, and then this year they finally got on camera, and they think maybe there's multiple TV mans.
I mean, at this point, it's got to be. Like, I love this idea. That
where is this, by the way?
This is the end of V for Vendetta, where we're all TV man. And we're all gonna give each other TVs.
Wait, well, where was it?
Henrico County, Virginia.
Henrico, near Richmond.
Close enough to Florida for mine.
Bryce, you are a resident Weird Things Virginia expert. How rich of an area is this?
It's a pretty well-to-do area. It's near the capital. It's kind of the suburb area of Richmond, okay. More or less. Yeah.
So this is like, all right.
This is a good, clean fun.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I would say no matter where it was, I think the understanding would be that this is good, clean fun. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it would be received as good, clean fun.
Do you understand the environmental impact of CRT tubes if they're not properly disposed of?
I mean, it is basically just giving somebody a job of lifting a box of plastic and putting it in the trash, right?
I mean, yeah, you could say that somebody literally distributed 1 ton of garbage everybody's doorstep.
Although I think I would suspect that that's probably what they're going for, right? Like they're going for the idea of like, oh, look at this modern marvel that now I'm like delivering like a paper man, but is also garbage.
Wait a minute. Do you think this is a way to obfuscate the $500 fine for dumping, illegal dumping?
There are easier ways to get around that, Brian. I mean, because basically doing, you know, leaving on property and is the fine probably heavier for what they did.
So this is like, I mean, if you caught TV man, right? Like, are you turning him over to the cops or do you just let him go becoming a TV
man? I want to know where I sign up.
Here's the nice thing about TV man is unlike Sasquatch, you don't risk being shot on sight. Like, have you seen
Elvis put on Elvis's door? So imagine, I'd like to imagine like there is some guy sitting in a basement in Virginia, you know, with this freaking crazy person news clippings and stuff there. And he built himself like a spinning wheel and it's the Dismemberist, you know, the crowbar killer. And then he put TV on the spinning wheel and he spun it. And he's like, let's see what I'm going to do. TV.
Huh.
All right. I can work with this. But the cool part is like there's somebody sitting there laughing at everybody, laughing at us, you know, laughing at everybody. Because
I'd like to think he's laughing with us. We're all in on this one. This was a delightful prank of merriment.
No, he's sitting there with the TV on his head watching this.
Yeah. Man, what? That's great.
That is great. What, are we going to get a bunch of copycats? What are the copycat versions? Are we going to get old-timey radio guy?
It's going to be a Sirius XM radios that he's just distributing.
They're just old car unit.
He's dressed. Then we get corporate sponsorship where it's like he's sponsored by Spotify. So it says Spotify on his shirt as he gives everybody old, outdated crap.
In 30 years, it'll be everybody's old Casper mattresses and MeUndies.
Purple mattresses.
I mean, you could be artistic. You could be doing jack-o'-lanterns and stuff.
Yeah.
You could. Although that would – I think people would kind of be happy about that.
Oh, I know what I'm going to be. What? I'm going to be Amazon box guy because those things just keep piling up on me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
On my head and take all my extra Amazon. And people will be like, oh, yeah, I got Amazon. And it's an empty box. I'm like, ah.
Got you again.
It got to take the label off.
Oh my God, if you filled a bunch of Amazon boxes, you got like Amazon looking tape, right? To like package it all up and you just left it. And then people were opening unsolicited Amazon boxes. Number one, I just realized in saying this that now there might be like a scare that it would be like a bomb or something like that. But like if you opened it and it was just like, I don't know, gummy worms in one of them and $5 in the other one, but just like kind of like Cards Against Humanity's like random stuff giveaway thing, like that level of like just nonsense on people's doorsteps, like that would be a funny art thing.
ICU in the chat suggests home phones. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh dude, give me one of them with the that are like that was clear and had all like the colorful like circuitry inside of it,
like a Swatch phone.
Yeah.
Never swatched in phones about. That's amazing.
That see-through
hamburger phone,
hell yeah.
Let's go jump back over to some SpaceX coverage. So Elon Musk and the SpaceX crew are planning, hopefully soon, pending FAA approval, to do a test of the Starhopper. The Starhopper is the test platform for the brand new Raptor engines, which is the test bed to lead to the Starship. But there are some new photos that just came out today. If you go over to the Reddit for SpaceX, you can see some photos of cylinders and things coming together, because they're also working on building the Starship at the same time as the Hopper. Again, the Hopper is the test thing. Starship is the actual thing itself, and it's kind of a sight to behold to see, well, you know, a giant version of this made of stainless steel are, you know, being erected out there in this case out there. I think the photos that came out today are in Florida.
That's awesome. There was a bit of
Bryce, we have photos of those.
I have no idea how to find anything. I can never find anything on the SpaceX Reddit. Do you know what thread it might be?
It's one of the top links. I'm sorry. I can find it for you right now.
If you don't mind, I don't.
Yeah.
In the meantime, there's a bunch of eye rolling in the press because, Elon announced that he wanted to sell Nuke Mars t-shirts and was, you know, reminding people of that idea that you could nuke Mars and all of that sort of like, oh, here we go again. Like, I'm trying to think of like who's against that idea. Like, why the eye rolling? Why is there a general lack of excitement for this clearly good idea if what you want to do is make Mars a habitable place?
What would the benefit again? Because I think maybe that's where it comes from, is they just don't know what nuking Mars would do for the planet.
So what it would do is if you melt all the water in the ice caps, you're also melting all of the dry ice, mm-hmm. and so that releases just a ton of sublimated CO2, which of course is a greenhouse gas. So you get a thicker atmosphere, you get increased atmospheric pressure, you get more trapping of warmth on there, and theoretically, if you throw enough nukes at it, you can have a good sized atmosphere and start warming the place up. The downside is it has the word nuke in it.
You just identified it. So number one, bring in all preconceived notion to not only nuclear energy, right, which we have our own hangups on, but nuclear weapons, right? Like a nuclear missile is something that people think they have a lot of baggage about. And then also tie the like a little bit of the whiteys on the moon element of like, okay, this is what we're talking about.
Well, I'll give you the counter argument. The scientific one is that there's nowhere near enough CO2 or water vapor there that if you nuke it to really noticeably change the atmosphere, to create the atmosphere and to do that. That's one argument that's made. There have been papers that have said that. Have said that, listen, you can melt all of it and it's still not going to have the effect that you want to. That's one scientific argument against it. I'm going to be very clear. I'm pro-nuke. I'm going to buy the shirt. The second argument is the idea that should we change Mars? Should we change it? You know, should we change this environment? The idea, it's all theoretical until we go there and we look and see what's there. So if we're like, oh, do we destroy what's life there? Like, we won't do it until we know. But even if there's no life on Mars, do we want to change the structure of this thing? You know, this is, you know, you could put some amazing condominiums in the Grand Canyon. I would love to live there personally. But, you know, other people are like, no, don't put condos in the middle of the Grand Canyon. And
This is a really, really heated debate in Kim Stanley Robinson's Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars trilogy, where there are the Reds are the ones who are geologists mainly, who say there is an unprecedented amount of geological valuable data by this untouched, pristine, alien, dead place. Don't you dare try to change a thing. And then the greens that are like, no, this is territory. We're going to expand to it. We can't do anything with it the way it is right now. So let's get to work changing it. I don't know. It seems to me like there's a lot of rocks of all different types throughout our solar system. And I'd rather this one be wet and green. And if nuking it is how we get there, so be it.
Is there a concern of radiation? I mean,
it's already an irradiated wasteland. There's no There's no magnetosphere to block any of the solar radiation. It's
The fallout, it would be very short-lived comparatively so to the amount of time that it would take, because you're talking something that's a centuries-long process.
Sure.
So if you're using, nuclear sources that have very short half-lives comparatively, so you're not going to – it's not going to be a problem.
I just think it's a catchy slogan, but I think it doesn't do a service to the subtleties of actually explaining the method, you know. They should have a second shirt that says "Nuke Mars," and then under it says, "No, it's actually good. It'll terraform it, and it won't have radiation left over."
"Don't worry about the fallout because it's already an irradiated wasteland, and all we're doing is increasing the chances that it becomes habitable."
Yeah,
and then the back of the Mars T-shirt.
Yeah, the back of the shirt is just the 100 most frequently asked questions written in like 12-point font, and so you can just like. Oh, no, you're thinking of a number 61.
Take it by the third vertebrae.
And then just to throw it in there, also an encryption algorithm for hard encryption that'll be illegal to travel across state borders.
Yeah, just put the DVD mask there you go. Code on the back of it.
Just put a QR code for all of that. Here's the thing, too. Bryce, if you got that photo, that we can show that. Like, here's the thing, because like, you'll get periodic, like, scientists find out, you know, colonizing Mars, not as easy as Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk think. Like, one, we don't know what they think. Two, it's a hard problem that we don't have all the answers to. And that's part of the reason they've put these hard problems out there of, like, you know, for Bezos colonizing space and whatnot, and Elon Musk Mars is like, hey, let's do a thing we don't have all the answers for. You know, let's not decide right now it can't be done. Let's find out if it can't be done. Because it's the whole point.
Yeah, that is part of their like entrepreneurial mindset, right? I mean, how many things have they started that made them their legacies, that based on the idea that they were pretty sure they knew the direction of where to go to the solution, and they worked until they got it.
Go back to the photo, Bryce. Take a look at this, guys.
Yep.
That's the scale. So what you're looking at there is super friggin' huge. You know, where you look, you see the warehouse next to it. That's they're building and still like in cylinders, they're stacking one on top of the other. You can see to the left, you see the dome that's going to go on the front of the Starship, which is going to be that. And then they're going to be building the booster, and this whole thing is going to be, will be taller than the Saturn V.
Jesus Christ.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And there's this giant dome shaped tent where they're going to be doing this assembly of it, which, you know, there's no door on it. I guess kind of when they're ready to take it out, they'll just pull that thing apart. Mm-hmm. And this is crazy. And you can see a bunch of other cylinders stacked up in the foreground there. Absolutely insane. It's like something out of a Robert Heinlein novel.
Is this an official SpaceX photo, or is this a random drone person?
I don't know. I think this is a random.
This is credited to Seymour Holdings, LLC.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess that's not it SpaceX. It's a very pretty photo, though.
I mean, just.
It does. It actually looks an awful lot like the scene where they're digging out the monolith in 2001.
Yeah.
So let's do it. Let's put Exploder 1 on that and just send it on out to Mars. Oh, also in the news, I saw that that Starman has made his first lap around the sun in a Tesla.
That's pretty dumb.
That so photo amazing. Was amazing.
It really was, dude. That was money in the bank / rage in the bank. Like it's perfect, because you want to talk about Whitey on the moon. That whole thing got some people fired up.
All right, let's get fired up for some picks.
Yeah. Hey, I got a show that none of you have heard of. What We Do in the Shadows on FX.
had you seen any of them?
I've seen none of them. I've now seen four of them. It's really funny. Obviously love the documentary. There's definitely – it's hard to step in considering the kind of like talent that they had on that show that have all obviously gone on to do bigger, more high-profile things, and none of them are returning, at least as of the episodes that I saw. Anybody from the original series has made their way to the show, but – or the original mockumentary. But, yeah, it's really funny and clever, and it retains a lot of that subversive fish out of water. Our characters are like good hearted, but also literal evil monsters.
I believe it's episode 6. There's a thing that's awesome. I'm very excited to hear from you after episode 6.
Okay.
Anybody else?
I'm reading The Three Body Problem. It's a translation from its best-selling book in China, and it begins with some vignettes that I'm sure culturally resonate to the Chinese as, you know, obvious, but to me were kind of fascinating. The idea that it's problematic when science disagrees with the dogma of during the Cultural Revolution. And then things are ramping up to suggest that maybe the world is the universe is a little bit broken or not what we think it is, and there's some fundamental misunderstandings. So I'm only maybe a quarter of the way into it. I'm digging it. It sounds like you were less of a fan. Did you finish it?
No, I'm probably maybe just a little bit further on, or maybe a little more than you are in it. Let me get a little time reader. I think
it is harder than I would expect, because I'm sure these are all very common names in Chinese, but they all are esoteric enough to my Western sensibilities that it's a little bit tough for me to keep track of, oh, this is a different person.
Now oh, and you're not reading it, so you actually can't see how it's spelled. Correct. Which actually, oh man, yeah. Interesting.
I'm halfway into it. I think the narrator, I think, does a pretty good job of trying to do different voices for people. I'm halfway into it, and I think the writing is excellent. I think the science stuff is... I write, obviously, as a guy who writes a scientific character, I'm very sensitive when I read other people writing about science to when I think somebody is doing a really good job or when somebody's faking it. And it just feels, you know, you're like, no, you said that because it's cool, but it's not really a thing. And now this book feels dumb to me. You know, I have that problem with stuff where it's like you could have done something, you know, they want to try to make it sound more clever than it is, and they kind of fail because they don't know it. And I read this is great because I think the science writing's great, the references are great, the examples are great. He uses analogies, and Brian brought up a great one about like this pool table setting there, and it's a great way to illustrate, you know the concerns of when you're doing observational, you know, on theoretical physics and things like this. So really good in that regard. For me, it's just the pacing is just sort of a thing where like I'm halfway into it and I'm going to keep going because everybody raves about it. So I'm not going to, you know, prejudge it, but it to me, it's sort of this kind of, it's like, all right. I want you to be there already, but it's a very beloved book. And my friends who've read it absolutely consider it one of their favorites. And I think the writing itself is fantastic.
I do like the choice from the narrator, who I believe is Luke Daniels. And they want to convey that there's a cop that doesn't have time for your high-minded intellectual nonsense. So they give him kind of a Brooklyn or Bronx accent, which is funny knowing that all of this is taking place in China. So yeah, but you got this cop like, hey, what's going on with the particular voice.
You know what? But it's great because also it's like when you watch like translations of like Hong Kong, as a kid watching Hong Kong movies and stuff.
Yeah,
they would figure out when they're from this region. Yeah, it's kind of like being from Brooklyn, or this is kind of like. Do you know the story that they dubbed Arnold Schwarzenegger's accent in Terminator in Germany?
Oh, they did?
What?
Because Austrian accents there sounded extremely rural. They sounded kind of like a hillbilly.
So to them, he was just like hey, y'all. Hey, y'all.
I'm the Terminator.
That's amazing. And I do like that. And I'm a huge fan of... we see it in, I'm trying to think of specific examples of it, but I love it in science fiction where you want to convey that a certain, you know, alien race is kind of like this, or you get it a lot in Name of the Wind, which we were talking about, where there are different regions. And so you could tell like, oh, you're doing kind of a Eastern European thing for this cultural oeuvre. And yeah. I dig all that.
I love it in fantasy when it's like, you know, you want to convey that they're cold and evil, you make them British, or if you want to convey that they're gay, they're British, or if you want to, you know, make sure that they're like they're running a castle, you just make them British.
Or if you want to write fantasy,
you make them all British. Yeah, that's right.
British. I again, I want to, and I can't, the name is Sichin Lee. I can't have trouble pronouncing his name because I'm an ignoramus. You know, we talked about earlier at the start of the show about, hey, what's going on Hong Kong and China and whatnot. Reading a book from the point of view of from somebody born, you know, raised in China from there, talking about, as Brian pointed out, talking about, like, it starts off with the Cultural Revolution, which is a thing that, you know, most of us here in the West are kind of completely ignorant about and what was really going on. And the a very honest sort of depiction from what I understand of, like, hey, this is how disruptive it was towards intellectuals. This is how really bad it was if you were somebody who was a teacher, an educator in this. And to be able to write and know that a Chinese writer can feel comfortable writing about that was interesting. But that was a great setting. It was neat because you see, it's interesting to read a book from somebody who is from there, who's also read Isaac Asimov and Heinlein, who's very much a citizen of the world too, which is cool.
I also dug the fact that when handed strange conundrums, all of the characters so far seem to react in highly rational scientific ways. I think we're early enough in the book. Is it fair game to talk about that vignette where the guy was taking pictures and kept seeing?
Yeah.
Okay. So dude snapping photos on his film camera. And when he develops the photos, even though it's archaic and everybody uses digital now, he keeps seeing what looks like a countdown. And the countdown seems to be consistent, and that's a little bit scary. And so he does it again, and you get this very scientific breakdown. And then he's like, "Well, what happens if my wife takes the pictures? What happens if my kid takes the pictures? What happens if I borrow a camera from somebody else?" And then at some point, it gets to the point where he's seeing the number, the countdown in his eyes, and so he goes to an ophthalmologist, and so he starts to describe, and they're like, "Oh, you're just overworked, you're tired," and then he starts it's a very rational set of, okay, now let's eliminate this other possibility.
Really, again, and I cannot praise how well the writer has done is in that his scientific characters behave like scientists,
right?
You know, not science fiction book scientists, you know, or 50s or idea of what this. They think like scientists, not because they're going to throw a bunch of terms and stuff at you, and therefore I am a scientist. But as Brian is illustrating, it's like, this is how a guy who's got a background in physics would try to solve this problem.
Right.
You know, and I really appreciated that. And people who are the theoretical physicists behave kind of like how theoretical physicists are.
Whereas the applied scientists have a different take. There was almost this deferential, like, what? I'm just an applied scientist. I don't know. I don't know. I'm digging it so far.
Yeah, that part I love. Pacing's my thing off, but I'm going to keep going with it because...
All right, we'll check back
in
on it.
I've been so disappointed because, like, you should read this book. It's the science is great. And I'm like...
I like how much it just takes for granted that you already know and understand where it's like it doesn't hold your hand with... So far, not a single person has drawn anything on a napkin, which is great. Yeah.
Or poked a hole through a piece of paper to show us how wormholes work.
I have a related pick.
Yep.
Because you guys are talking about the three body problem, and I actually thought when I watched this, I thought this was going to be the three body problem, but it was a short story written by the same author, Liu Cixin. It's a film that came out this year, and it's on Netflix now, The Wandering Earth. And it's very interesting, and from the little bit that I saw about the original short story, the film is a little divergent. But the movie is very good. It's this big, like, apocalyptic sort of crisis movie where, you know, they install all these thrusters, these, like, big jets onto the Earth itself to move it into a new star system. And people live under the rockets, like, because it's an ice age.
It is far from three body problem in house. It is dumb. It is so, like...
It is a pretty dumb action movie.
I didn't read the short story, and it's hard to reconcile in my head. Mm. I could not make it through the movie because I'm like, if you think Armageddon was too intellectual...
It is a little dumb, though. I bring it up because the things that I've seen is that the short story leans more into, like, the societal issues and the actual debate of doing this project and like, does have more nuance versus this film that made $1 billion
in China. It's the one-body problem.
So but this was I think I remember you mentioning this, Bryce. Like, mm-hmm. this just wound up getting dumped on Netflix, right? Even though it was, like, one of the biggest
earners in like Chinese box office history.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's great, and I was crying by the end of it, and it's
Bruce Willis. He loved his kid.
But it is a dumb action, like let's not get it mixed up. This is a dumb action movie, but it's a spectacle. Like all the CG use, part of it is that the surface of the earth is basically frozen over, more or less. Mm-hmm. And so there's one of the acts, they're like transporting this big engine to go save one of the big rockets, and they're driving through a flooded and frozen Shanghai and so you're just seeing the actual city, but it's, you know, these huge, you know, 100-foot walls of ice, and they're like going through the crack. It's an incredible spectacle, and for an action movie, it's really fantastic. It's The Wandering Earth. It's on Netflix now.
Right on. Turns out that Three Body Problem is a sequel, and all of a sudden this Earth comes in out of nowhere, like, that's why physics is so crazy. Out of the way, nerds.
No spoilers.
My I Wandering Earth, like the premise, I'm like, man, like, I remember watching Thundar the Barbarian, where they had like the episode, because remember Thundar?
Oh yeah, absolutely, dude. That was great.
Yeah, so Thundar was this post-apocalyptic story. It was kind of like a He-Man story, but set in the far future of the Earth. And
I think it was supposed to be a Conan kind of like story. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, I mean, your barbarian trope, but like the Earth's moon's been split in half and whatnot, and they have there's a scene where they need to. There was an episode, I think they had to move the Earth, and they go find all these rocket engines, like, you know, at one point, like in like Antarctica or something like that, and they move the Earth.
That's great.
That's like that episode of Super Friends where Lex Luthor was like, he was setting up all these ways to cause the Justice League of America to have them be the architects of Earth's demise. Like, he sent a missile to blow up Earth, but it was yellow, so Green Lantern couldn't stop it, so he moved the Earth instead.
Does Green Lantern not touch yellow stuff?
Oh, yeah, no, he doesn't do yellow. That's his thing. And so he moved by moving the
Earth. Why are you laughing, Bryce?
This is very serious. This is my childhood.
But by moving the Earth.
I'm laughing at my childhood.
And by moving the Earth. By moving the Earth to a different orbit, it changes the climate. So there was vines everywhere.
Or like the Futurama, where they do the same thing. Where they push the Earth into a farther orbit to stop global warming.
First of all, I don't see why that can't work.
We could do that. We just need to make a lot of robots that far gas.
It's only an engineering problem at this point.
Did you have a pick, Andrew?
My pick is, let me get my notes here. So I watched this movie, and like, I watched it again to sort of analyze this thing going on like years later, because it's a franchise that they're talking about bringing back yet again. It is a beautiful, 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 beautiful movie with a plot that you go like, man, this is really, I wish the writers had more opportunity and time to sort of really build out the story. And this is Tron Legacy.
Oh, yeah. Mm. That movie was a good half of a movie spread into the length of a full movie.
Yeah, I had a problem with like a lot of it, because the protagonist doesn't do anything, you know, and that doesn't really, you need to go here, well, I'll go there, and I'll go there. Hey, we got there, movie's over.
There's definitely,
you know,
there's,
like wow, like what's the plot? You're kind of like, there's a story, but there's not a real plot in my feeling towards it. But I don't want to be too harsh on it, because again, it's, you know, when you're doing a project for Disney and you've got to bring back this IP and you've got who knows how many iterations go through, because damn, if it's not a gorgeous movie.
It is gorgeous and the music is great, but there was definitely
Daft Punk. It's Daft Punk does that soundtrack, and that's a good soundtrack.
And they cameo like 7 times.
Wait,
just
what?
In case. I didn't know. Hey, that. Man, we're it still here. Not. Whoa, yeah. That's crazy.
What are we doing in this nightclub? Also, Daft Punk's here.
Also, you know, I remember going into it, Bonnie saying like, oh yeah, there's a whole set piece about a party, and like, wow, man, I wonder what a party in Tron World's gonna look like. Turns out, a shitty kegger. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, you realize that like, there is this, it's one of these kids, because I watched it like in the next night I watched Blade Runner 2049, which is another a gorgeous movie, a better plot, but still you're like, Harrison Ford becomes like he's the Maltese Falcon, you know, the Deckard character is basically, we got to find the thing. They're going to steal the thing. We're going to move the thing to here. And you realize he has very little agency in it when he finally comes introduced to it. But it's such a gorgeous movie. But I'm like, in Tron, I'm like, tell me more about the backstory of where these ISO things came from and about Flynn building this place. Like, that's the story I want to get. And then the revolution that happened, that was the interesting part. And Blade Runner 2049, I'm like, you watch that movie again in the Wallace character, Jared Leto's character, you're like, okay, let me get this straight. This guy, he's so rich. The Wallace Corporation has this monolith building in LA that's even friggin' bigger than the Tyrell Corporation building, but he really lives off world on some other planet because he's got millions of replicants that he's colonizing the galaxy with. I'm like, I want to follow that guy. You know, I want to go off world. I want to go follow that story.
But you know, whatever happened to Gosling's girlfriend, you know, so we got to figure it out.
Yeah. Oh, but I mean, I loved, I mean, that story.
No, I really dug it. I dug 2049.
No, I love 2049 too. And I loved the best part for me was like the relationship with Kay and the Joy character, the digital, that like, what's it, you know, two artificial beings and their love. Loved that. And I would say that like, but I was going like, man, the thing I'd love to spend more time here didn't bother me. But like in Tron was like really like, man, like, there's a really interesting story here, but
yeah, I think yeah, that was the problem. And also, if we're gonna, Garrett Hedlund is not Ryan Gosling.
Also, how great would it have been in Tron if, like, you know, at the end of Act 2, they really needed help and they found a down on his luck Sark, like, you know, like, hey man, we need you. You're the only one who knows how this program thinks. And then and David Warner, you know, digital David Warner was in it. That would be amazing.
That'd be great. Yeah, I went and watched the back-to-back. I went and watched Tron, and it's a trippy, weird, strange movie, but it's still cool because that reality of it is so I
remember revisiting the original Tron in my 20s, and I loved it deeply as a kid, but realized that the original Tron is one of the best movies to just have on with no audio in the background, and one of the worst movies to give your full attention to. And maybe Legacy sought to follow in those same footsteps.
Yeah, what I'll say about the original Tron is that, like, I kind of recommend watch it and go, wow, this is really weirder than I remember. And then go watch it again, knowing, oh, yeah. And then you're like, there was a clearer story there. There was a clearer objective. You know, we knew, you know, Flynn's goal, whatever, everything that he sort of did to serve that were Legacy. It's like, I'm going to skydive off the Incom building. Turns out I own it. I'm like,
there was definitely a full Campbellian circle with the original Tron. You know, you got somebody who's washout loser who's given up, like, yeah, what does it matter? You can't make a difference in this world. That's why I run an arcade. And then he's transported into a strange world, and we see a bunch of wacky stuff. He makes friends along the way, meets a wizard, and then realizes, oh my God, there is things worth fighting for, and comes back with the, you know, all the money on the planet. That's a real story. And you're right. That was definitely lacking in Legacy.
Yeah. Well, like the Wizard of Oz was an influence because, like, that he goes into the Tron world and friends of his are there.
That's right. Because, that's right. Yeah, the programmer folk.
Yeah, the programs they made look like their creators, and it was funny because, like, I watched after Legacy, I was like, I think Wreck-It Ralph makes more logical sense than this does.
Yeah.
To like where the characters came from, what their reality is to their world, the consistencies and stuff. So
yeah.
Anyhow, we'll end on that note. It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.